You know, I had a privilege of meeting Fritz Mondale a couple of times, and not enough to where I should have been calling him Fritz. I should have been calling him Walter, or Mr. Vice President, actually, is what I should have been calling him. But I do know an individual that knew him well enough to call him Fritz, and to meet him anywhere in the world, and they'd be sitting down having a conversation about their public service. And that is someone I appreciated and admire a lot, and that is United States Senator Byron Dorgan. Senator Dorgan, good to have you back on News and Views.
Hey, good morning, Joel. Nice to be with you.
You lost a good friend, Senator.
Yeah, I did call him Fritz. Fritz was quite a remarkable man. You know, he and Hubert Humphrey over across the Red River there in Minnesota served in the Senate for a long, long while, both ran for president. Fritz lived a long, long life and a good life. He was a remarkable man.
So when you think of him, what's your first thought when you think of Fritz Mondale?
Oh, my first thought is a smile, by the way. So it's 1974. That's a long, long time ago. And he's running for president. And he's going to run in the 1976 election. And I was the state tax commissioner in North Dakota. And I don't know quite how I got invited to do this, but I was in Grand Forks. And I was invited to join Fritz Mondale, who was in Grand Forks. And then we drove down to Hillsboro to tour the sugar beet plant. And I remember the day because it was that, you know, it was one of those days where that plant, you remember the odor in a sugar beet plant at the right time, right? Yeah.
I live by Wahpeton. You realize that? Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about then. And so we climbed around inside that sugar beet plant, and it was, I just remember, it was a pretty tough day. And we finished, and that was when I got a chance to visit with him, and he was, you know, he joked about things. He was a good guy, really, really easy to, and informal and easy to get to know. And so about 2 weeks later, he held a press conference. And, you know, this is 1974, so he's going to run for president in 1976 against, you know, I mean, Jimmy Carter is one of the candidates and so on. But he held a press conference 2 weeks later, and he said, you know, he's pulling out of the run for the presidency because he wants to avoid staying in more Holiday Inns. I don't think he meant that, you know, in a pejorative way about the Holiday Inn in Grand Forks or about the Holiday Inn brand. I think he's just saying, you know, I'm just kind of tired of staying in hotels and motels. And so that was the first time I met Fritz. And so I used to kid people. I said, you know, that was one of the reasons he pulled out. We took him to that sugar beet plant, and he thought that was kind of a tough situation. But anyway, we got through that, and he pulled out, and then he was selected by Jimmy Carter as his vice president. And he really did become the first vice president, I believe, in many, many, many decades in this country that had real substantial power. That was given to him by the president. And they made, you know, they made no bones about that. He was going to be a very significant part of that administration.
Apparently, some of that, Senator, was on the advice of Hubert Humphrey, his mentor, that Humphrey pointed out how miserable his job as vice president was for LBJ.
That's true. I heard that. I mean, you know, there was a vice president, I think it was John Nance Garner, who described the vice presidency as a warm bucket of spit. Well, I don't know whether that's accurate or not, but they didn't have a lot to do. They just didn't have so much to do, vice presidents, because presidents, including, by the way, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, didn't really give Truman much information about anything. And I should just as an aside story, if you don't mind, there's a tiny little room in the Capitol that's not marked for anything, but Truman was down there with his feet up on a little table, and they were about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. He and the Southern guys would meet for brunch, water and whiskey or whatever it was. They called it the Board of Education. He was sitting in that room with his feet up on the little card table, having a little sip of a drink, and the phone rang, and he was informed that FDR had died, and he was now president. And so, you know, there's a lot of great stories about these folks. The stories about Fritz Mondale are wonderful stories because he was such a good guy. He just was a he could be tough. He could be sharp. But at the same time, he was almost always informal and nice, and he had a quick smile and a good, robust laugh. That's how I remember Fritz.
Did it shock you that with the tragic death of Paul Wellstone, that Vice President Mondale was willing to put on such short notice his name on the ballot and his hat in the ring to fill that Wellstone seat that was, you know, days away from being decided in another election?
I was not shocked, only because you got a sense that Fritz Mondale would do what he felt his party and also the country needed to be done. The tragedy that happened to Paul and Sheila Wellstone was just devastating, and you know, just because you lose friends like that, and the fact is, this happened right at the end of a campaign for the Senate that was a very important campaign, and so Fritz Mondale was asked to step in. He did, but you know, he just did what he felt he should do for his state and his country.
You know, when I think of you know, Fritz Mondale, I think of that moment though, because I don't think he wanted the job. I think mm-hmm. he did it, like you just said, Senator, because it was like that was the right thing to do. It was what was needed. I don't think he wanted to go live in D.C. again, and it's hard work.
Yeah.
What you and others did was hard work, and yet he still was willing to step up and do it.
No, I think that's the case. He was asked to, and so he said yes. You know, the other thing about him is when he ran for president, he, you know, in 1974 when he pulled out, he also said at the same time, he talked about avoid sleeping in Holiday Inns, but he said, I have an overwhelming desire to be president, but he just wanted to avoid more hotels. He did run for president then in 84, and he lost significantly. He did put Jerry Ferraro on the ticket, a congresswoman who I served with in the Congress, a remarkable woman, very, very capable. And so, you know, he kind of broke the mold as well by the first candidate to put a woman on the ticket. And I've always appreciated that.
Yeah, there were some great moments during that presidential race that, you know, obviously he knew he was going uphill in a race, and he had to say things that he felt needed to be just completely blunt and honest. And the talk of raising taxes obviously was one that many people, you know, had probably wished he wouldn't have said, but the way Ronald Reagan handled it, you know, in terms of his youth and inexperience, that always stuck out in my mind, Senator Dorgan.
Yeah, I remember I was at the convention that year in San Francisco, and I remember, you know, him saying that. He said, Ronald Reagan and I will both raise your taxes. I will tell you, he will not. And I forget the exact language, but I thought, you know, that's not something I'd have probably said.
Yeah.
He was taking some risks. And frankly, running against Ronald Reagan in 1984 was not an easy race. It was an unbelievably uphill race. And Fritz Mondale lost in a very significant way. But I still think he was always proud of having made the race. He was enormously proud of serving as vice president. And mostly he was very proud of serving as a United States Senator from Minnesota. And he was a good senator, really a terrific guy.
There's one other story I remember, which I'm going to say it and then you can tell me whether it's true or not. But, you know, we had a crusty old senator that I admired in Quentin Burdick. And after the Fritz Mondale found himself as vice president of the United States, you know, apparently Quentin Burdick came up to him and said, I've got just the man for you for postmaster general. And Mondale said, well, sure, Quentin, you know, we'll take a look at him. Who is he? You don't need to know that. So it's like old school politics.
You know, I don't know whether that's true, but it does sound like crusty old school politics. You're right.
It does. You don't need to know that. Just give my guy the job. So, you know, this, it's good we're celebrating 93 years. I mean, this is a man who I just love getting a chance to visit with you because you knew him. I mean, you knew him the insides and outs, and I would have liked to have known him better, Senator.
Well, I last saw him about 2 years ago. And he had come to Washington for a dinner that had been held for Jim Johnson. And So I had a chance to talk to him. He was, you know, he was 90 years old or so. He looked healthy, looked in good shape. He had a good spirit about him. He had lost his wife some years previous. And, you know, he like everybody else, has had great success and also some significant setbacks in his life. But, at age of 90, he was like he always was. He was, he had a good spirit. He was feisty. And even then, he cared a great deal about the issues facing this country and how wonderful this country was, is, and can be.
That's the perfect way to end this. Senator Dorgan, always good to talk to you, sir. Thanks for coming on.
Good to talk, Joel. Thanks a lot.
You bet. United States Senator Byron Dorgan, who served my state for a long, long time in public service.